Hello and welcome back to Cyniclub Podcast. I'm Dion.
I'm Rhys.
I'm Billy.
And I'm Matthew.
So, today we're talking about some of our personal favourite films. Each one of us has picked one from our Letterboxd top four to give the spotlight to. And now my chosen film is Blade Runner 2049. One of my favourite films ever. I think it's very cool. It's a very good bit of sci-fi in general. It's got some great directing, great shots. It's got a lovely colour scheme. And I think it, unlike a lot of sequels, follows up to the original quite well without kind of stepping on its toes. I like it a lot. What do you guys think of it?
I think it's one of the best sequels of all time. I've been taking a piss at this point. I think it's honestly really good.
Yeah, it's good, but I think it pales massively in comparison to the original. I don't think it even comes close.
Oh, controversial. Okay.
Is that controversial?
I think it's very controversial.
I mean, it's controversial now because, like, people just loved it. What's he called? Denis Villeneuve. Everyone just loved to kiss up to him, and like it's got a higher rating on. Like, I don't agree. The original's just got so much more flair and style, and Harrison Ford's brilliant, and it's grimy, it's dirty.
It's got more life to it, I think.
Yeah, it's so cool.
Well, I do agree with that. I think 20, whatever the film's called, Blade Runner 2.
Blade Runner 2, we'll go with that, yeah.
It's pretty much, I think, has a lot more style to it for me. I do love, like, the neon light with the hologram, the test is a lot more interesting now. And the final, like, bit under, like, the underground with, like, the water and stuff is really beautiful. Like,
yeah.
I love it.
Oh, that is amazing. Yeah,
it's a good looking film, don't get us wrong. I think the original's much better than 2049.
I think the original's got a better protagonist as well.
Yeah. Oh,
I can't get by. What's he called? Agent K.
Agent K.
He's so dull. He's like,
I know that's the point, but
he's like
so
if Agent 47 had no personality. I love Ryan Gosling as an actor. I think he's phenomenal. I think he looks really cool in this film as well. But I just don't, he's nowhere near as intriguing as Harrison Ford is as
Deckard
in the first one.
Oh, well, I think his whole, like, the thing that compels him to, you know, pursue the narrative, find out what he is and, like, where he stands in the
world.
Like
that. That's
quite
cool
interesting.
And the idea, like, that he believes he's, like, pretty much the chosen one.
Yeah. Like, the double, triple fake out is
that's
quite good.
Cool. I
really like that. And how he gets very emotional over it. He shows that quite a lot. Like, his disappointment grows throughout the film. And he's just very confused. I'm also confused. I've seen the film, like, 3 times. And I'm still confused by it. Final shot is lovely. Obviously, bleeding out in the snow, whatever. He's not even bleeding. He's fine.
He's just knackered.
He just dies, I think. He just dies in the snow. That's very good. Spoilers, everyone. Sorry about that. But yes, it's a great
a little bit too
film.
too late there, Rhys.
I know.
It's been 10 years, so it's fine.
Exactly. It's so, at one point, everyone's got to have seen that film. I do agree with what you say, though, but it does remove some of the life from the streets of the world, but it does expand it quite a lot vertically, I think. There's this weird desert area.
Well, it's a lot more like modern sensibilities towards sci-fi rather than what I prefer, which is obviously the 80s techno grunge dystopian aesthetic of the original. I prefer that much more than what they went for. I've been saying repeatedly, I like the visual style of 2049. It's a really good looking film, but I just prefer the way the original looks.
Yeah, I do see what you mean. It's like it's taken Blade Runner, which was, you know, the cyberpunk film, and cyberpunkified it a bit more to what our, like, modern sensibilities are, with all the big glowing big glowing ads, and more neon, less. Because I think Blade Runner's, like, ads in that were quite monotone. They weren't poppy.
They were kind of in your face at times, but they weren't, like, I remember the bit where he's in the Chinese restaurant towards, like, the middle point of the film, or the you can see, like, a Coca-Cola advertisement there.
It was more the occasional neon sign and less glowing pink Ana de Armas, you know?
Yeah.
I like her character as well. I think she's quite cool as an expansion on the...
It's a cool character, but I don't think she can act.
I think she acts really well in this. Like,
she's meant to be a robot.
Yeah.
And then she carried that character over to every film she's done since.
She was all right in James Bond. I thought she was cool.
Yeah, she's
all
right in Ballerina too.
I've not seen Ballerina yet.
But yeah, everything about the film works. It's just, I prefer the original.
I still think, the thing is, with these two films, 2049 is still really good.
Yeah.
I do love it. I think it's amazing. But I think that's also says something about how good the first Blade Runner is.
Yeah.
If 2049 is, I think it's brilliant. But I still think Blade Runner, the original one, is better. Like I said, it does say something about how good these two films are.
Yeah.
You know, like I'd first watched it on Amazon Prime in the house, 2049. And then I think it was for an essay we were doing. Yeah. And then we went to see it in the cinema and it elevates the experience of it. It really does.
So good.
It's amazing.
I'm a bit jealous of that because I never saw it in the cinema. I saw the first one in the cinema, but I didn't see the second one. Yeah. But I've heard it's just an experience.
It just blows your eardrums out, really. The soundtrack's so loud.
Oh, it's got a great soundtrack.
It's so like sound synthwave-y design too. As well, and like ominous. It's not like, that's not like dance synthwave. It's just like, like it just sounds like
a cow.
It could be like, it could be a cow. Yeah, it could be like, you know, just noises in the city. I don't know. Could be a cow. Yeah, it sounds like just ambient noises in the city.
Yeah, and it's scary.
It is. It is scary. It feels like partially a horror film at times, especially when Harrison Ford's in it. In the like Vegas theater with Elvis there.
The Elvis
is there. That's my favorite part.
I love that part.
It's funny how much he cares more about Deckard than like any other character. It looks like he's actually having a fun time with this one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which just goes back to that Alison Hammond interview.
Yeah.
I think Harrison Ford, he plays up the grumpiness. It's part of the part of his persona, but like he enjoys everything outside of Star Wars. So I don't really get this idea of like, oh, he's grumpy, he never likes it.
Yeah.
He likes everything but Star Wars.
I know he's happy about Indiana Jones. He's happy about Deckard. He quite liked Red Hulk, even if the film wasn't very good.
And he's
in a ball at Comic Con.
He's in what's it called as well, that TV show Shrinking. Himself.
Oh, right.
He's trying to be good in that.
I watched the fella, I've forgotten his name, out with the Muppets.
Yeah, Jason Siegel.
Yeah, Jason Siegel. I saw an interview about him going after Harrison Ford. He's like, he sounds like a really nice guy if you met him in person.
Yeah, it's just if you mention Star Wars to him, he's just like, he just hulks out. And
think, you know what, I think Deckard might be, no he's not, that's a lie. He's one of my, he's in the top three Harrison Ford performances.
Definitely, yeah.
It's Indiana Jones first.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Any day of the week. Then I think I'd say Han Solo, then Deckard.
I don't like how 2049's just another film where Harrison Ford's is in a legacy sequel, playing a deadbeat dad.
Yeah.
Because he's a deadbeat dad in Star Wars. Mm-hmm. He's a deadbeat dad in this, and he's a deadbeat dad in Indiana Jones.
It's just kind of a coincidence, to be honest.
I think it's just
Star Wars.
Mm-hmm. I think the stars just align, don't they? And he is destined to be the grumpy, the grumpy dad character. What do we think the action in the film, though? I really like the action.
I think it's
been improved by modern technology.
Yeah, I think what sticks in my mind is where he just like the bit with the house, Deckard's house, and like they come in and they start shooting.
Yeah, that bit's good in Vegas. That bit's really cool.
I think my favourite bit of action is quite a short bit, but it's when Kay crashes into the junkyard and he's being surrounded by junker people.
Yeah, I like that.
He whips out the gun, and because he is or isn't a replicant at this point, we don't know. He, because of his like enhancements and all that, his gun just like snaps from each of them. Just go, like essentially he's got like Deadeye in Red Dead, and it's cool. Really, really cool.
He wallops them.
And then
they wallop him actually.
Yeah. The sound design is great as well. The sound design for the weapons and that is brilliant. The gun sounds so punchy.
The gun. Yeah, when he shoots them,
When he's fighting, I think David Hughes is quite underrated in it as well.
He's only in for 10 minutes though.
He's only in for 10 minutes, but it's a great 10 minutes.
Oh yeah, it's him, isn't it? Mm-hmm. At the start, when he puts him through the wall.
Mm. Yeah, he puts him through the wall. It's really cool because we get to see more what the replicants can do.
Yeah.
Because you know, Blade Runner was held back, but it was of its time, you know.
Yeah.
They couldn't do replicants like flipping and all that.
I do still think, actually, when we mention action, I don't want this to turn to me just saying, that's cool, but the original does this.
Yeah.
I like the bit in the original, obviously, he's when you got Harrison Ford and he's fleeing from Roy Batty.
Yes.
That he's called. Roy Batty. And he's terrified of him. He's climbing up the side. Oh, God.
Like, he's supposed to be a cop, he's supposed to be a hero, he's supposed to be like some dude who knows how to handle these guys, but he gets through it by the skin of his teeth really every does. Single time.
And then they throw that, they sort of flip that around in 2049, when he gets put through a wall, but then he ends up beating him up.
Yeah.
I do like him. It's a really cool opening scene.
I do have one little hot take. I don't know if it's a really hot take, but I think the music in the film's way weaker than the first one, to think about it.
Ooh. No, I agree.
I think they reuse a lot of the score from the first one. But its own score is very much, it's kind of, eh. I think it's all done by Hans Zimmer too, compared to Vigel's doing the first one, which was just a beautiful soundtrack. It just really sucks because I love the soundtrack in the first one. The second one just kind of weakens on.
I wouldn't say. I still think it's quite good. But I still think it helps with the world. Yeah, the world building. I think it adds to it.
Yeah.
You know, it's really cool. I quite like it.
Exactly.
Right, so next up is my choice, which is a film that I watched a few months ago, and I'm hooked on it. And I've been trying to get everyone else to watch it. It's called With Null and I. So, what do you all think? And I'll tell you why you're right or wrong.
It's pretty stylish. It's a good, nice, stylish film. I don't really have any problems with it. I think I've never really seen Richard E. Grant in much. The last thing I remember seeing him in was Argyle.
He's only in it for like a minute,
but that's the last thing I remember seeing him in. And I was like, oh, wow. And then everyone's going, oh my God, it's Richard E. Grant. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's Richard E. Grant.
He's a good actor. I like him.
And then I'm like, oh my God, I see why everyone's freaking out about Richard E. Grant
now. He's great in this.
He's really good.
He's really good. It's the first scene he's in when Marwood, or I have to call him I, when Marwood's coming up the stairs and he's like panicking, he's having like a crisis.
Uh-huh.
And Whittle's like, we've got a problem. We're out of wine. At that point, I was like, oh, I love him. He's great.
Like, as soon as I saw him, I was like, he's cool.
He's cool.
He's cool. He's a complete bum, but he's cool.
Yeah.
Like, that's his whole. That's his whole thing. That's his whole vibe.
Yeah.
I really like that.
Yeah, he's just jealous, isn't he?
He's jealous.
She's like, you've had an audition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I really love Paul McGann in that film.
Paul McGann. Oh. Paul McGann's very good as well.
He's so underrated. Mm-hmm. Like, he's been only in a few films, but this one stands out to me because he's just so likable, but also
He's very vulnerable, isn't he? Like, the bit at the very start when they're in the pub and he goes to the toilet and some guy calls him a perfumed ponce.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the bit where he's in the bathroom and it's his thought, he's going,
yeah,
was he talking to me?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like considering if you could take him in a fight, and he's like, he'd batter me.
Yeah.
And then they both go.
He's completely like neurotic. That's what's really fun about him. When he's sitting in the cafe as well and he's just looking at the newspaper, he's like, he just starts freaking out. I love him. And this was based on a true story, wasn't it, this film?
It was a biography,
very loosely based on a true story. That's like, when he went up to Penrith.
Oh, mm-hmm. God.
On a holiday.
Yeah.
So that's where it came
from. Gone on holiday by mistake.
Gone on holiday by mistake. Are you the farmer? I think that's one of my favourite lines in any film now. It's the way he turns and he screams at him.
Oh, he just goes, shut up, doesn't he?
He's got lines in this film. Mm-hmm. The dialogue's written really well.
It is. The dialogue to me is just, like, it's very, like, simple, but it's just how they say it.
Yeah.
It's just the chemistry between them that gets me.
That there would, it would be nothing without the actors in it. Obviously, absolutely, any film wouldn't. But like, they really carry the dialogue.
Yeah.
Is it, what's the drug dealer called? Is he Danny?
Oh, or is I don't it know. Donnie? Yeah, I've
something like that. It's something like that. I was like blown away by him. Like, he's so captivated me with every word he says. He's so weird.
What I like about that was that Whittle's having none of it.
Uh-huh.
Like, you can tell that he's met him multiple times. He's like, just get him out. He's quiet here.
Uh-huh. But by the end of the film, he's just smoking. What was it? The something carrot. Is this big
from Mexico,
massive joint with him. And what was the other guy called? It was like Ponderinal or something.
He just shows up in the bath.
He just shows up, he's in the bath. He starts chanting and spinning the globe around.
Yeah.
And that's at the end of the film. They just drop all sense at that point. I really love
that
it.
That honestly actually made me sad, that scene though.
Oh, the end.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I said in my review of it. It's a sad film that masquerades as a comedy.
Yeah.
It's two broken people trying to navigate the end of the 60s and like a bohemian era in a world that doesn't really care for them anymore.
Yeah.
So like Paul McGann gets out in the end and he changes out of his like disheveled look and his cool bohemian look and he puts on like a stylish professional clothes and a hat, and he leaves Withnall in the park reciting Hamlet to just wolves in the rain while he's got a bottle of wine in his hand. It's a sad film, but it's like, even with Uncle Monty, he's like there for comic effect most of the time, but like you've got like a massive tinge of sadness with him, and how basically every scene about with him is about his loss and how he never got to be with the person that he loved, and
it's his final letter
that
got me about that. He says, like, what is it for as the eavesdropper or the voyeur, I'm destined to, like, move on and never settle down.
Yeah.
That was quite sad. And his every scene is, as you say, him being like, essentially, like, leached off by Withnall.
Yeah, yeah.
And I, as well, I suppose. And that's the title of the film. That's the name of the movie.
It is a sad film.
Mm-hmm.
I do also like the connotations of it being very much an LGBT film too.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, I've heard people say very... that. At first I was like, oh, that's interesting. Then you look back at it and I'm like, I can see it.
Yeah, you've got the opening where he's reading the paper in the chippy or whatever mm-hmm. it is. And you've got like the big focus on the article about someone having a sex change.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Obviously Monty, he's a gay man who's lost the person that he loved, and it sort of made him repress himself, and that obviously comes out when he tries to force himself on Marwood.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got like the obviously Withnell and I. There's like it's like a almost like a closeted relationship in a sense where he's like insistent on staying in the same bed together and stuff.
Where it's like, well, if they think someone's trying to break in and
he comes into the bedroom in the middle of the night with a shotgun. Yeah,
there was multiple scenes in this film were shot like a horror film.
Yeah, there's characters who are terrifying. The man with the eels. You know when they're like, I think that's one of my favourite scenes is when, there's so many scenes mm-hmm. I can talk about, but the bit when they're in the pub and he's like, sell me your eels, and the guy's like, having a back and forth. He's like, well, joke's on you. You don't know where we live. And he goes, I know where you live. And the way they both turn around to face him, it's so funny.
To be honest, that's pretty much just Cumbria.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, we've been.
Oh, yeah, we recreated this film.
Yeah, we did one of the lakes in a thunderstorm.
Went on holiday by mistake. It was a nightmare. And then you, I can't say that. There was even an Uncle Monty character.
Yeah,
there was. Stayed with him. That's scary.
There's one thing that like stares with me is the guy. It's a police officer who just shouts,
"Get in the back of the van! Get in the back of the van!" Yeah, that threw me off so much when I first watched it.
It's
I swear you can see Richard E. Grant almost breaking character.
I jumped as well when I was watching it. It's that and the Jimi Hendrix soundtrack playing. They getting out of the car and walking towards them, and was like hyping them up.
It's
really
so
weird.
Good. You know, yeah, I'm glad that I watch it. I'm glad Usable watched it and mm-hmm. enjoyed it.
Yeah, it is such a stylish bit of film. I like it.
It's lovely. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy it.
And next up, we have
my pick, which is Ghostbusters. It doesn't really need any introduction.
It's one of the best comedies of all time.
Yeah, great film.
Might be the best comedy I've ever seen.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I would agree with that.
I just rewatched it yesterday because thinking I might as well. There's so much like setup and callbacks, like what, like jokes that I just do it so well. Like I've noticed, I don't remember like a lot of the jokes in the film. Like I don't have a good memory of it, but like it's such a great film.
Yeah, it is. It's
brilliant.
Good.
It's so mm-hmm. good. It's just it. Every single time I go back to it, I appreciate it more.
Yeah.
Like, it's been deified in, like, recent years.
Definitely.
Like, with a lot of 80s films. So, like, it was a comedy, basically. It was, like, it was an unofficial SNL spin-off, if you really want to say that. But, like, in recent years, it's like, oh, it was this great 80s franchise, and we're going to make all these legacy sequels, and it needs to be preserved. Like
two films.
I like the second ones. I like all the films. I don't really have a problem with any of the Ghostbusters films or the game, but like nothing really came close to the original.
No. Yeah,
it's brilliant.
It's got just a sense of charm, like you said. SNL, they threw together so many like amazing comedic actors. You got Bill Murray, Harold Ramis, Dan Aykroyd, and Rick Moranis. Rick Moranis in this film.
Every time
I watch it, he's got me in bits.
Who brought the dog?
So good. He's trying to get a woman to like Twister with him.
House party just follow all of his clients, and it's just all these old people.
It's
just
so funny.
It's so good, man.
Oh my god!
It's the bit with dog way, like where he goes caffeine and he's like, help, help, in the restaurant.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
No one gives it.
Down.
Nice pooch, want a milk bone? And then he's just getting mauled against the window and nobody even cares. It's just so
horrifying.
Funny.
He actually has full body in that film. It is such a scary film.
It actually
film.
Is scary.
It is. It scared me as a kid.
Yeah.
It scares me now.
the game scared me more because like, I had it when I was younger and then I was literally on the opening level where you go to the Sedgwick again to get Slimer. Mm-hmm. And he came through the wall. I was like, cannot play this. I'm frightened.
That was the bit that scared you.
Yeah.
Did you get to the bit where they were in the, I think it was a school?
Well, I've replayed it since. Mm-hmm. It was, that works as well as a sequel to the original Ghostbusters, but that's also sort of, it deifies it. Cause it's like, it's a lot more lore heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, I think that was originally like the premise for the third film.
Mm-hmm.
Without the Slimer and the Stay Puffed bit at the start, because you just sort of, you had to have that in for the iconography.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think every lead actor is great in, obviously we've talked about Rick Moranis, but the Ghostbusters themselves, they're great. Sigourney Weaver as Dana, it's a really interesting change from Ripley, which is what I've seen her in.
You mentioned the Ghostbusters themselves. Ernie Hudson has got what is my favourite comedic line of all time in this film. I have seen shit that will turn you white. It's just so funny. It's everyone's face in that bit as well, and the mayor's looking at me like, what's going on? It's so funny. I can see Connell's in the control room.
It's not that bit which makes me laugh. It's a bit where they're talking about God, and it's like, well, I've got it, like when it's like talking about God and how, like, if God exists and stuff.
So it is. I think the second one is also quite good.
It's really overrated.
And enjoy both of them just as much.
I didn't know people hated the second one.
Yeah, people loads don't people like the second
it.
One.
I think the issue with the second one is it does stuff very similar, but it's still
dead funny, I think. Bit in the courtroom when Rick Moranis, he's like, they turned me into a dog. And sorry, I got turned into a dog and they helped me. Thank you. It's still funny.
It's funny. And then you've got the Scolari brothers. You've got the walking Statue of Liberty while everyone's dancing. Mm-hmm. You've got, here's Vigo. It's great. And like, I think even Afterlife and Frozen Empire to an extent, they're not very funny, but they're still entertaining films.
I didn't enjoy Afterlife as much.
Mm. I loved Afterlife.
Okay. I think it was fine. I liked the end. I kind of liked the end.
Mm-hmm. Frozen Empire was a bit...
Did they bring the original ones back in Frozen Empire as well?
But going back to the original, it's great. I love it. It's basically had a permanent place in my Letterboxd top 4 since I got the app. And it's probably going to stay there for a lot longer.
There's people out there who haven't seen Ghostbusters.
Oh, no.
That's crazy.
It's one of those films that you see. It's good to see as a kid because it's like scary but not actual horror. So if you're a kid and you see it and you say, like, oh my God, the ghost, you do get scared by it.
But then you've got the funny men there.
And there's the funny men to calm you down, exactly.
Funny men.
It's perfect.
It's just like childhood. That's the thing with my Letterboxd top 4. It's, aside from a couple of them, it's all like childhood films that have just never left me, and Ghostbusters is one of them.
Yeah.
I'd go as far as to call it a masterpiece.
Yeah, I
agree.
Mm-hmm. It's probably my top 10, honestly.
Yeah, same. It's... Well, obviously, since it's in my top four, but it definitely is. It's class. Mm-hmm. It's cool.
Yeah. And Dion, we'll get yours.
Okay. And finally, my pick is In Bruges, which I think is one of the funniest films ever made compared to that.
In Bruges.
Yeah, In Bruges is really funny.
In Bruges is really funny.
I like In Bruges.
Yeah.
It's
similar to with Nolan.
It has that sadness in the sense that it's
funny, but it's also about a man who wants to kill himself after
pretty much after killing a child.
Horrible act.
It does the dark comedy very, very well.
It does it. The bit when I think the best example of the dark comedy is when Brendan Gleeson's going to kill him.
Yeah,
and he sees him going to kill himself. He's like, no, don't. And he turns around. He sees he's got a gun. He's like, what are you doing? And he's like, nothing. That bit's great.
Mm-hmm. I think for me, one of my favourite bits in the whole film is with Ralph Fiennes, and it's just like when he finds the story, he's just literally just losing it.
Yeah, well, he's on the phone.
And he has to go to like pretty much Bruges. Like,
I'm sorry, I called you an inanimate object. I was upset.
You're an inanimate fucking object.
It's just it's another really funny film with great performances. Like, obviously Colin Farrell and Ralph Fiennes are great. I'll always sing Brendan Gleeson's praises.
Is one of the best actors.
Every time he's on a scene, he's pretty much the heart of it. Like, he generally cares about them, but he has to do his job, doesn't he? Mm-hmm.
That's the emotional core of the film that keeps you going through the comedy. I think that's why it's so good, because it tells a really good story while also being very, very funny.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. It also is quite a violent film.
Oh, it's a violent film.
Yeah. Brendan Gleeson getting pancakes.
Yeah.
That bit really throws me off, because it's a very sad death scene, but he's been jibbed, essentially, like in like a Doom character. He's just been minced, essentially, and he's just in bits, and he's still like having this emotional death.
It's kind of funny because this Colin Farrell and his girlfriend talking, and there's no his mate just dies.
Yeah.
And he still managed to have that emotional death while also having it being funny and gory all in one. Yeah. And obviously Ralph Fiennes, very interesting.
He's good. Character. He's so funny. Mm-hmm. The bit when he meets Brendan Gleeson's character. Called Harry?
Yes.
No.
Like, no.
I don't know what he's called.
I was just saying.
But when
yes,
he meets Brendan Gleeson's character and they're having the back and forth and he's like, I'm gonna kill him, and he, you know, he's like trying to convince him, and for a bit it seems like he's getting through to him.
Yeah.
But then obviously he doesn't. His death as well, spoiler alert, but you should have seen in Bruges.
Uh huh.
You know. When he killed himself at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I think that bit's really cool as well. Because his last line is, oh.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that because he believes he killed the kid, but it's actually...
Yeah, it's a small man.
Yeah.
Who I thought I knew him from somewhere, from like, I think, Bedtime Stories or whatever, but no, it wasn't.
Okay.
From Bedtime Stories.
Yeah, it was a film with Adam Sandler.
Oh, right, yeah. Okay.
I like the bit in the cafe or the pub or the restaurant or whatever it is when he just starts kicking off at that Canadian fella.
Oh, the smoking so area,
yeah. Oh my God.
There's so many scenes you can go to for that film. It's like, oh, that's funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's really funny, it's really entertaining, but it's got loads of heart.
Yeah.
And that's why it works so well.
I think my favourite scene in the whole film is when it goes from comedy to something's going on. Is when he sends Colin Farrell down and he's like, the comedic bit of, oh, hang on, he's coming back now, and he pretends to be walking on the door, opens the door and shuts it. And then you're like, that's funny. And he goes, have you killed him yet? That bit, I was like, all right, that's what's going on. And then Brendan Gleeson's performance during that scene is great. Brendan Gleeson is, oh my God, he's unbelievable. He's one of my favourite actors.
Yeah.
He's phenomenal.
It's him and Colin Farrell are just a great duo.
Great pairing.
Uh-huh. And Banshees of Inisherin as well. We need to...
Oh, so good.
Banshees is better.
I'd say it's less funny, but it still has that funny vibe.
Banshees is better.
I think it's better as well.
Oh, yeah.
I think Banshees is more like... I think for me, Banshees is good, but I think I like him Bruges much more comedy-wise.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Banshees... Adam...
Well, yeah, Banshees isn't really funny.
It's not meant to be funny.
It's very dry humour, though.
Yeah, it's got funny parts.
It's got funny parts,
but it's quite a miserable experience.
Yeah.
It's a fella getting his friend cut off from him for no real reason, and then you've just got Brendan Gleeson like cutting his fingers off and chucking them at him and stuff.
And there's vague mentions of the troubles as well.
Yeah.
Anyway, good film.
Good film in Bruges.
Yeah, very good film in Bruges. Very good film. All four
very
that we've done. Letterboxd top four. Hiya, you can't get much better than those films.
Uh-huh.
Send them in.
Yeah, send them in. Send yours in. Get in contact with
you.
We'll just dish yours if you have like Adam
Savage. I won't.
Give us some Blu-rays, please. So we can watch them.
That was so sad.
Okay, I think that's all the personal biases we have time for today. And now we pose a question to you. What's your favourite film? Get in touch with us at cineclub.podcast@sparksunderland.com.
And make sure to check out our socials at the Cineclub Podcast _spark on Instagram, at the .cineclub.podcast on TikTok, or the Cineclub Podcast on Facebook. They're all good ways to keep up to date on the latest podcast developments.
As always, this episode was recorded and produced by us, the Sunderland University students, as well as being edited by Emily Main. A special thanks to Steve Cannon, Barbara Sadler, and Richard Berry. A reminder that our four patrons and pros this week have been me, Billy,
me, Matthew,
me, Reese,
and me, Dion. This has been a Cineclub production for Spark. Thanks for listening.